Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
And hello there, and greetings, Earthlings. John Dixon here with the Astronomy Show on 103.2 Dublin City FM. No Ben this evening, he's back in next week. So just on a week off this week. So very good evening to you. You can catch us live on the internet or at dublincityfm.ie or at www.astronomy.ie or even as a podcast. And now a special welcome to those over across the pond, that's the Atlantic Ocean on astronomy.fm. Very good evening to you from over here. I know it's still only afternoonish over there. And of course we welcome any queries, comments or questions that you may have of an astronomical nature, of course. You can email us at astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. With the new systems that we have here, we've got text and WhatsApp on the same line, 087-179-1032. And standard text rates apply. So let's have a little look around the sky just at the moment. Fortunately, the International Space Station is not back in our evening skies until July the 9th, until July the 27th. So we've got to wait for, what have we got, another 3 weeks or thereabouts to get back in there, about 3 weeks or so. And we'll keep you tip-top. And topped up on that particular one. Mercury is in the deep glow of sunrise at the moment, brightening from around plus 0.2 to minus 0.3. So it's getting a little bit brighter. You can use binoculars to try to, for the lower left of brighter Jupiter, and they're moving slightly apart with about 15 degrees separation. And that's where it is at the moment. It moves quite quickly around the sun, actually, so you only get a little pocket to see this. Venus, on the other hand, is a brilliant evening star, and it's in the west from twilight until the late evening. It's not quite as high in the dusk as it was a couple of weeks ago, of course, but well worth a watch. It's the first one that appears into the evening skies and is way over in the west. It will be hanging around for about an hour and a quarter after full dark, and it's nearly in line with Castor and Pollux, and they're in Gemini just at the moment, and then it moves further out of line every single day. So if you are watching that, that's a good two pointers to go towards as well. And up to the upper left of Venus, we have Mars, and it's glowing weekly in the upper left of Venus. And it's getting dimmer and dimmer. So it's not quite a fist at arm's length away from it at the moment, but it's still pretty close. And in the telescope, if you are lucky enough to have a telescope, it's just a tiny little blob. It's at 4 arc seconds in diameter, and it's way, way the far side of its orbit from us, so it's a good long way away as well. Jupiter, on the other hand, is low in the east as dawn brightens, so that's an early morning riser planet. It might be easiest to see it about 60 minutes, maybe 45 minutes before sunrise, and then it disappears because it gets bright. Saturn is well up in the southeast by the beginning of dawn. Uranus is at magnitude 5.9 and is in the low, hidden glow of the sunrise. Neptune is, well, it's very, very hard to see as well, so you won't get too much to see that. Let's go back to Venus just for a moment. I don't know whether many of you have been out there watching, and I've been asked quite a lot, what is that bright star-like object in the sky? That is Venus. It's over in the west. It hangs around as it gets dark for about an hour and a half or thereabouts. It's similar to our own little planet here on Earth. It's only, would you believe, 400 miles narrower than Earth. And it has a diameter of 12,104 kilometers. Its average distance from the sun is 108.2 million kilometers. Its orbital period, it goes around because it's slightly closer to the sun. It goes around in 224.7 Earth days. And its rotation period is 243, so it spins quite slowly. On the other hand of that, you do not want to be there at all whatsoever. It's 464 degrees centigrade on the surface. It doesn't have any moons like us. And the interior Venus is a dense rocky world whose material has settled to form layers. Its iron and nickel core has cooled and partially solidified. So there is a little bit of mush in the middle. And what else? Well, atmospheric composition. We have rich in carbon dioxide, not very good for us up there, with a small amount of nitrogen, trace elements, and a few other gases as well, such as water vapor, sulfur dioxide, and argon. So not a really a very pleasant place to be. So it's really in the greenhouse effect. So it has an 80 kilometer deep atmosphere and mostly carbon dioxide. So we will be at some stage be going back to Venus. I have more information about that coming up later on as well. Now, sunrise and sunset. We have tomorrow morning. It will be the 14th. It is rising at 4:56 a.m. and sets at 21:54. And we get the daylight length. We get about 16 hours and 57 minutes, just a little bit over. And we gain, we've started to drop back as we go through June now. So we're losing a few seconds every day, which is hasn't been really noticeable, but you know, we certainly notice it as it gets darker later in the evening. And the moon, on the other hand, it's tomorrow morning. It rises at 2:52 a.m. and it sets tomorrow at 18:04, but you won't get to see it all day. I'm just on it till it gets bright. It will disappear. So it's at about, where are we? It's 62. It's about 58% lit at the moment, just at the moment. It's 384,024 kilometres away from us here. And as the month goes on, it'll stretch out in its elliptical orbit. And I did have the information about that for how far it was away from us. And I do have that, I believe. Yes, Apogee, where it's furthest away, 404,000 kilometres, 509. And that's where it is, and it'll be Friday the 26th, so it's creeping out. So again, it's about 384,000 kilometres away from us just at the moment, and it'll sneak out to apogee just over 400, just approaching 405,000 kilometres. Okay, so there we go. Now, just back to Venus just for a second again. Its first ever private Venus mission has been delayed until at least 2025. And this is the first private mission to Venus, and it won't launch at all this year after all. So the Rocket Lab mission, which was initially set up to launch last month, has been put in the what we call it, the bin. It's just been sidelined for the moment. And their focus right now is on delivering customer missions as a priority. So if you were looking forward to seeing a launch to Venus and the mission, it's not going to happen for another year and a half or thereabouts until 2025, a little bit more maybe. So we'll wait and see what happens there. Staying with launch delays, Russia has delayed its launch of the Luna 25 Moonlander until August. And it has been hit with another further delays. The Luna 25 is the robotic lander, and it has been postponed from July the 13th, and now will lift off no earlier than August. And the Russia's TASS news agency reported this just a week or so ago. So they established that it would not be appropriate to launch just now, and just with the hiccups and technical issues as well. So we'll keep an eye on that one for you as well. So looking forward to seeing that going up in August. So it's all systems go, I hope, for everything. So there we go. And not forgetting the text line again, 087-179-1032. A very good evening to you. You're tuned to The Astronomy Show right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Now, if you're a meteorite watcher, and if you have seen meteors coming through the sky, which only seem like they're at arm's length of falling into your garden, most of them happen to be about 60 kilometres up. They're only in the sky for about less than a second, maybe 1 to 2 seconds at most if they're a bigger one, but there was a possible meteorite splash in British Columbia in the pool in the back garden. So a British Columbia man said he is trying to determine whether an object that splashed down in his backyard pool was indeed a meteorite. So his name was Justin Broad, and he was outside his home in Delta in the US earlier this week when something fell from above and splashed into his pool. Now, I've been out sometimes and watched these little things. You think they're only falling into the garden, but in fact they're not. So, luckily enough, he said that particular object which he suspects may have been a meteorite was slightly disintegrating in the water. So it's quite soft compared to some of them that come through. It didn't cloud up and dissipate, it just dropped into the shallow end at right at the bottom and in a ball. So he was trying to determine, with the help of some friends and technicians, so they drained the pool to try and salvage the object, which they have done. And looking at it, it appears to be a brown with tiny crystals embedded. And Alan Hildebrand, he's a planetary scientist who serves as an associate professor in the Department of Geoscience at the University of Calgary, said he has only seen pictures of the particular object, but he thinks it is unlikely to have been a meteorite. So there's a little bit of an argument going on there. Well, a good one, I hope. So the dry picture particular, he agrees, and looks like dried mud, but the mud is brown. So if it was an unusual type of meteorite, we would call it a carbonaceous crondite. That sounds like a Superman type thing. And we'd expect it to be black or dark grey, so it indeed looks just like mud from this planet. So what was the splash, I wonder? Yep, so we'd wait and see over the next week or so to try and find out. And another message to meteorite hunters, put down your magnets. Each year, thousands of space rocks pierce through the Earth's atmosphere and hit the ground as meteorites. These fragments of comets and asteroids can land anywhere, but are often spotted in open terrain as the deserts of Africa, the Antarctic blue ice. It's a great place to find meteorites, where a meteorite black exterior can stand out. So, and seemingly, they're not magnetic, as most of us would possibly think. And best thing to do is to, indeed, if you find one, pick it up and call somebody who might know. So, and just sticking with asteroids, and there's no need to worry. There was odds dropping about the newly found asteroid, and they say that it won't indeed come anywhere near Earth. It's the asteroid, which his name is 2023 DW, and is estimated to be around the size of a 50-metre Olympic swimming pool. It was first spotted by the small Chilean observatory in February the 26th past. They've been keeping a good eye on this at the moment, trying to do a couple of calculations and everything else. And it swiftly shot to the top of the NASA and ESA lists of asteroids that pose a danger to Earth, and leading a raft of alarming news headlines. Some warning lovers cancel their Valentine's plans on February the 14th, of course, on 2046. So if you're planning a Valentine's Day, 2046 was the original time that the asteroid might hit Earth. But at this stage, late last month, the asteroid was given a 1 in 847 chance of hitting Earth, but the odds rose to 1 in 432 on Sunday, so that's halved thereabouts. So, and it will go down with every observation until it reaches zero, until in a couple of days at the latest, so they're just keeping an eye on that particular one as well. So no one needs to be worried right now about this guy. I suppose it's they're the ones that come in, like the Chelyabinsk meteorite, that come in directly from the sun, and we don't get a chance to see them coming in because of the brightness of the sun, etc. And that particular one injured about 1,200 people. It shot across the sky. Luckily enough, there was a lot of video cam shot from cars, vehicles, everything of it streaking across the sky. And with the sound pressure wave, it blew in windows, it blew in doors and everything as well. So it caused a little bit of damage, but it seemingly just disintegrated into dust, and never really found too much of that particular one as well. Now, here's some news on China, and they have a new parachute system for making controllable landing of rocket boosters. Now, I see a picture in front of me here of this one. So they know where it's going to land. They've got to evacuate everybody. This particular one landed on a road, would you believe? It's a big lump of a thing. And during the recent launch, China tested this particular parachute system that can help guide fallen rocket boosters into targeted areas. So they have a certain amount of control of where these might land with a hidden parachute inside. And the particular system was used was a Long March 3B rocket carrying the Beidou navigation satellite into orbit on May the 17th. This was from the Xishang Satellite Launch Center in Sichuan Province. And developed by the Academy, the parachute brought the rocket down to a predetermined location, narrowing the range of the landing area by 80%, which is pretty good if some of these are way, way out of control as well. So we'll just wait and see what happens there. Now, just going back to people who might be interested in astrophotography. Now, I have expressed an interest, Ben has expressed an interest, but we haven't ventured into the world of the sky guider, things that you put on the top of the stands and tripods and whatever, you might have monopods, tripods, whatever you have. So a few names to look out for, and they start really at about €329, which is not too bad, and you can attach your camera to this, put it on the top of the tripod, and you can track anything you want, really, with this, and do some long exposures, etc. So just some of the ones to keep an eye out for with the iOptron Skyguider Pros, and there's also one called the Optron Skytracker Pro. So the Guider and the Pro there. We have a Vixen Optics. We have the Benro Polaris, which is probably the most expensive at around €1,000. And, of course, we have the Skywatcher Star Adventure Mini, which proves to be one of the more popular ones that we should probably think about buying if we wanted something like that. But essentially what they do is they would let the camera track, as in the most go-to telescopes now, just to track the movement of the Earth and keep the object of focus in so you can make a long exposure. So if you are looking for that, keep an eye out for some of those or even do a bit of research. And we have Stephen Kerwin in K-Tech Telescopes and Fingers here who will help you indeed to choose your correct tripod and motorized unit. Now, going back to Luke Skywalker's fictional home world of Tatooine, where the science fiction of Star Wars was born, but seemingly the discovery of a new planet BEBOP-1C confirms the second ever known planetary system orbiting twin stars. So seemingly, it's not science fiction after all. This is the second one they've found, so they've been looking for decades, and astronomers wondered if planets with twin suns like Luke Skywalker's fictional homeworld of Tatooine, if that's the correct way of pronouncing it, if you're one of those guys. Now, scientists have discovered the new system that is home to multiple worlds, so I'm going to keep an eye on this one as well, because it'll be interesting to see two suns in the sky, and to see if they go down together, if they stray apart, or what they do in their lifetime as well. Well, you're listening to The Astronomy Show right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. John Dixon here. Ben is away for this week, so he's back next week. And our text line, as always, is 087-179-1032. Of course, 1032 being the number of the radio station here as well. Now, Make Make or Marky Marky. This is the planet that's knocked Pluto out of its dwarf planet status, and I think it's called Marky Marky. It's probably a few, it sounds better that way as well. It's a dwarf planet in our outer solar system. It's the fourth body identified as a dwarf planet, and this was one of the bodies that caused Pluto to lose its status as a planet. Now, it just happens to be just big enough to be called a planet, and it's a real shame that Pluto lost it. They should just leave it. It has one moon, though in 2015, astronomers using the Hubble telescope discovered a tiny object orbiting Makemake, and it's too hard for me to see it in this particular photograph, but it's certainly worth a look. So, it's the second brightest known object in the outer solar system. It's just slightly dimmer, would you believe, than Pluto, as the colour on the surface is sort of a browny colour. And it's 870 miles wide. It's about two-thirds the size of the more well-known dwarf planet. And it orbits the range of Pluto, but is closer to the Sun than Eris, taking about 310 Earth years to circle the Sun. So it takes quite a while to get round as well. So Mackey's moons, designated S2015, it's nicknamed Mark II. It's about 100 miles in diameter, so it's a little moon. And it was seen about 13,000 miles from the surface of the particular planet. So the Hubble discovery, this suggests that MK2 is as dark as charcoal, and this is why it's a little bit dimmer than Pluto, which seems surprising that given Mackey is so bright, one of the possible explanations is the gravity is too weak to hold onto the reflective ices which are needed to reflect things back. So it was discovered first in a wide-field camera on the April 2015, and they've been keeping an eye on it ever since. So that's, yeah, changing the definition of a planet. It's a big argument at the moment, poor old Pluto, but there's nothing we can do about that. So now, just coming a little bit closer to Earth, and scientists have now beamed solar power from to Earth from space for the very first time. The Space Solar Power Demonstrator's MAPLE experiment was able to wirelessly transfer collected solar power to receivers in space and directed the energy into Earth. So it's a new way of trapping energy, as we can get power from any time during the day. It doesn't dip. And as it gets dark here on the surface, this doesn't happen. So they have demonstrated its ability to wirelessly beam power through space and direct a detectable amount of energy towards the Earth for the first time. And the experiment proves the viability of tapping into a near limitless supply in the form of energy from sun, from space to Earth, which is really interesting in the, I suppose, the new solar way of gathering energy and making everything a little bit cheaper down here, and with the greenhouse gases that we have and all that sort of stuff. So there's a, definitely, it's called MAPLE, so keep an eye out for that one as well. So, and it wirelessly transfers collected solar power to receivers in space and directly able to transfer the energy back here to Earth. So that's another interesting topic of stuff that we should be watching out for in the rate of climate change and the way we could reduce carbon dioxide emissions as well. So I have a picture here, if you're interested, of the International Space Station going across the face of the sun. So it's worth a Google. It seems like they're only right beside each other, but in fact they're not. They're 400 kilometers above our surface here, but 250 miles and 92 point something billion miles away from the sun, but they look like they're really nearly touching. And that picture was taken with a sunspot, which would have gobbled up the Earth here as well. So it passed in front of three sunspots in this, in a split second, as it flakes through the evening skies as we see it. And of course the ISS orbits every 90 minutes, which is interesting. That's why we get to see it on the right trajectory here in Ireland, possibly twice or maybe three times during the day, but most of the time it's only once. So a fantastic photograph. It's worth a certain look. It's called the ISS Transit on June the 9th in 2023, which is only a few days ago. And it's some sight, that particular space station, with the backdrop of the sun. Now, I've never heard of this particular one before. It's the Cosmic Jellyfish. And the Space Hubble Telescope, the Hubble Space Telescope, has reeled in a titanic cosmic jellyfish galaxy way, way, way out. It's called JO206, and it's located about 700 million light years from Earth, fitting in the constellation of Aquarius, the water bearer. And the Hubble image shows the main body of JO206 as a colourful disc surrounded by a hazy cloud of glowing dusk. Again, you can gather this on Google, and it does look like a jellyfish with the tentacles at the back as well. So you can keep an eye out on that particular one as well. So that'll be interesting to see. So where else have we got there before we disappear off? NASA seemingly gives a name to every spotted studies on Mars, and the Perseverance rover is currently investigating rock outcrops along the rim of Mars's Belva crater. That's about 2,300 kilometres away from NASA's Curiosity rover, recently drilling a sample at a location called the Ubujara. And the crater bears an official name. The drill location is identified by a nickname, hence the quotation mark. So both of these names are among thousands applied by NASA missions, not just to craters and hills, but also to every boulder, pebble and rock surface they study. And the number one reason that they pick names is to help the team keep track of what they're finding each day. Now, that's very, very reasonable to me. And later on, they can refer to the many hills and rocks by name as they discuss them and eventually document the discoveries as well. So they will all have official names, and how they come up with these names has evolved since the early days, 25 years ago, where they used cartoon characters in the initial days. And it's the way that they do it, but it's pretty good. So it's I'm going to keep an eye on this too, because it's Mars. I have a big, I suppose, a big poster of Mars at home that I got in one of the National Geographic magazines. Fantastic, but I could probably do with a brand new one. And there we go. So good evening, Alan. Thank you very much for tuning in. And thanks for the high send via Ben last week. Great solo show, Alan. He's down at County Kildare. Great to have you along as usual. He's our guru for all the information as well. So that's about it. So what else we got? Oh yeah, people have always been asking me about books. And this one keeps coming up. And this probably is my favourite novel. We have loads and loads of books as well. And we were talking to a few astronomers over the last number of years, Ben and myself, and they sort of are the impression, if you have a couple of star books and things like that, just give them into the library. You're probably not going to use them again. Let somebody have a little browse. But this particular one, Exploring the Night Sky with Binoculars, is one of the best ones I've ever come across. It gives you a great idea how to guide your way around the sky and look to see where things are. And one of the most recent ones that I spotted, and Ben had helped me in this one, was M101, which is just in the handle. It's in the equilateral triangle of the plough. And that was the big explosion up there that's been lasting. It could last up to 10 weeks, in fact, and it was an easy way to find it. So I will go out with my telescope. It looks like a relatively clear evening in the Dublin area, and it'll be a good one when it gets dark. Of course, I have to, I suppose, go to bed and go back up again. Anyway, that's about it for me from this particular edition of the Astronomy Show right here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. The email address again for comments and questions, astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And thanks as ever to James Sweeney for making it available as a podcast, and to Conor Lennon for making it available on astronomy.ie. Well, that's all from me for this particular edition. And next was Hello China, followed by 9 p.m. with Threads with Bren Linnett, and at 11 p.m. Ear to the Globe with Nigel Wood, and that's worth a listen, where he plays world music. At midnight, After Hours with Dave Barry and the Jazz, Blues and Soul, until 2 a.m. where it goes a little bit quiet, and back in the morning with Helen in the driving seat for the Live Drive program as well. So please join myself and Ben next time, same time, next week. We're back again with the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other and look after each other, of course. And thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John. So goodnight, John. See you next week. Bye bye.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.